This is Jane McMillan interviewing Rusty Chandler at his home, 232 Indian Mountain Road, Lakeville, Connecticut. The date is May 15th, 2012.
Get this a little bit closer. That way it's not stretched.
What is your full name?
John R. Chandler, Jr.
And where were you born?
Cleveland, Ohio.
And your birthday?
April 16, 1934.
And your parents' full names?
John R. Chandler and Elizabeth Chisholm Chandler.
Do you have siblings?
Yes. I have a brother and a sister, and I had another sister who is no longer with us.
Would you tell me about your educational background?
Sure. I went to a grade school in Cleveland at the Hawkins School and then transferred to Hotchkiss in 1948. I left Hotchkiss in 1953 and attended Brown University, where I majored in classics and graduated in 1957. Subsequent to my completion of the college degree, I have had graduate work done at Columbia University, at Boston University, and at Fairfield University.
How did you happen to come to this area?
Well, my father went to Hotchkiss as a student and graduated in 1923. Both my parents had gone east to school, having grown up in Cleveland, and they decided that it would be a good idea to send me east to school. So I followed basically in my father's footsteps, and then eventually came back to the area to be on the faculty at Hotchkiss.
Can you give me a memory of Hotchkiss when you were a student?
I can give you many memories of Hotchkiss when I was a student.
Good.
It was clearly all male. It was didn't have a lot of frills in those days. Faculty was, I think, 100% male. Wives of a few teachers, and many of the teachers were bachelors, single individuals, and wives basically were chaperoned dances with their husbands and poured teas. Other than that, you rarely saw a woman on the campus.
Oh my, how different today.
Very different today, very different.
When you got your educational degrees, where did you go to teach?
I started my teaching career after a very brief experience in the insurance business, which I did not find to be particularly interesting to me. And I started teaching at the Gunnery School in Washington, Connecticut, where I began teaching history and Latin in 1959, the fall of 59. I spent 3 years at the Gunnery, which I dearly loved. The experience was totally time consuming. I was coaching three sports. I was running a dormitory. I was the dean of one of the classes, and I woke up one morning and said, geez, I'm being married to this school, and there's no time for a social life or a chance to meet members of the opposite sex. So I left there in 1962, and I moved to Boston and taught at the Belmont Hill School, a day school in Belmont, Massachusetts, right outside of Cambridge. And I taught English and history there for 2 years and coached three sports. But I basically had my own apartment initially, and then I got married the summer of my first year at Belmont Hill, and then subsequently we moved to Weston, and I spent a second year at Belmont Hill and before moving on to Hotchkiss.
And when you came back to Hotchkiss, what was your position?
I was hired as the assistant director of admissions at Hotchkiss with no teaching or coaching responsibilities, although I did have a have responsibility for a corridor in the freshman dormitory, the first floor of the freshman dormitory. There were only really two of us in the admissions office in those days. Once again, they're very different from the admissions situation today. And you really spent your entire weekend doing admissions because many, many people wanted to visit the school on a Saturday, and so you would interview flat out all day Saturday, and then Sunday you would spend half of the day writing up your the interviews of the previous day.
And how did your responsibilities expand over the years?
Well, at the end of really the third year of doing the assistant's job, I went to the headmaster and I said, I've done this admissions work for 3 years and I'm not particularly happy, and so on and so forth, and maybe I better go back into the classroom. The headmaster at that time was Bill Olson, and he said, well, Steve Ballmer, who is your boss, has decided he wants to go back into the classroom, and he's recommended that you succeed him as director of admissions. So I swallowed my pride, and I went back and ran the admissions office for, from about 1967 through 1973, at which time I needed a sabbatical. I was given an opportunity to spend a year as the assistant superintendent of public schools in Weston, Connecticut. So I took my family, which by that time numbered three, plus my wife, and we moved to Weston, Connecticut for the year. And I spent that year in the public schools as the assistant superintendent in with stints in both the elementary, the middle school, and the high schools, which was an interesting experience to say the least. I returned to Hotchkiss in the fall of 1974, and of course the school at that point had decided to go co-educational. So a very different school I came back to from the one I left, because there were now 68 girls included in the student body, in addition to the 345 or 370 boys. It was a wonderful change. I look back on it now as being a very refreshing period in the school's history, as it began to change into a full-fledged co-educational institution.
My next question just fits beautifully. Tell me how Hotchkiss has changed over the period of time from when you were a student to when you actually left Hotchkiss. What are some of the changes that have occurred?
Well, I think one of the big changes has been Hotchkiss, when I was a student, was a totally faculty-run school. Faculty meted out discipline. There was a pretty severe disciplinary system, which was called the censure system and sequestration, and censures were given for all sorts of infractions, such as not cleaning your room, or after repeated warnings you were brought up in front of the faculty, your case was brought up in front of the faculty. You weren't brought up in front of the faculty, but the case against you was brought up, and the faculty voted on it, and then they assigned a censure if they felt that the offense was egregious enough. And if you got three censures, you were then placed on something called sequestration. And sequestration was a punishment that really was, it took you out of sort of the mainstream of the school. You weren't allowed to participate in athletics. You had to go to classes. You had to go to study hall when you didn't have classes. You had to wait on table for 6 weeks. You couldn't go to a Saturday night movie. You had to go to a detention study hall. It was just dreadful punishment, and it was frankly, a deterrent for getting into trouble. I mean, you could come right up to the edge of that, and just by then you began to mind your P's and Q's to make sure that you didn't get sequestered. Another way of getting sequestered was to amass over 25 tardy marks. And you got a tardy mark if you were a minute late to class, or a minute late to study hall, or you missed a meal in the dining hall. That was five. Now you got five tardy marks or an unexcused absence. It was just a very regimented institution, and that just isn't true today. It's a much more relaxed feeling. I think faculty today are considered much more the friend of a student rather than the big figure of authority that they were back in my day. This is not to say that you didn't formulate relationships with faculty that were really positive, and I think I consider myself very fortunate to have had four or five very good friends on the Hotchkiss faculty during my student days. Most often, in my case, they came about because I enjoyed athletics, and so my coaches wound up being my supporters and friends, and also favorite quartermaster, Bob Hawkins, who is a great English teacher here for many years, was my quartermaster during my upper middle 11th grade year, and he was a very, very dear friend of mine, as was Tom Stearns, who was my quartermaster for 2 years prior to that. So I think that the relationships that I formed with four or five members of the Hotchkiss faculty were very, very instrumental, I think, in making my experience at the school better than it would have been otherwise.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I really am. Now, what has the relationship between Hotchkiss and the town? Has that changed, again, from the time you were a student until when you retired from Hotchkiss?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it that in my time as a student at Hotchkiss, I remember Lakeville, Connecticut as being about a mile and a half away from campus, and you walked to town and you walked back right along Route 41. This was before the Woodland was built, which was called the Halfway House. If you wanted a hamburger, a nice hamburger, and you had time on a weekend, or if you weren't assigned anything to do in the afternoon, you could go down to Carl's Lunch. Carl's Lunch used to be in the old there was a building down there which housed, Argyle's Barber Shop and a few other things. And Carl's Lunch was sort of in the basement of that, and it was right where the road which leads now by the Patco station goes into the old town field there. And that was one place that was frequented by students. Another thing was Hugo's Novelty Shop, which was in sort of where the White Gallery, as I recall, was, maybe the liquor store on the right-hand side of 4144 as you head towards Salisbury. They sold records and magazines and so on and so forth. And then next door and across the street from the old Salisbury Bank and Trust Company, where Founders Insurance is now located, there was a drugstore called Doc Leverty's. And you could go there and get milkshakes and sundaes and things like that. And then there was a movie theater where Mises Pizza is today. On a Saturday afternoon, it was permissible for Hotchkiss students to go and on a rainy Saturday and go to the movies there. And that was about the only reasons you would have ventured into Lakeville.
Entertainment and food.
Entertainment and food, exactly. But I don't think that the town and the school intertwined at all in comparison to today, which I'm happy to say that the school has played a much more important role in the town today than it did back when I was a student. No question about it. People attend concerts, lecture series. The athletic facilities of the school are open to townsfolks, the swimming pool, the indoor track, the skating rinks, the tennis courts, and by the gym and on the 49 fields are used by townsfolk without charge, actually or a modest charge for swimming or for walking on the indoor track. But I think that the school has reached out far more today in their town-gown relations than they ever did back when I was a student here. And certainly, I think also the members of the faculty oftentimes have been involved with various different parts of the town, whether it's the Lakeville Hose Company or the Salisbury Volunteer Ambulance Squad, or the Recreation Commission, or any of those things, where faculty or faculty spouses are today playing a much, much more important role in the town.
Then you see it as a symbiotic relationship.
I do today, yes, although I'm sure that there are still pockets of feeling that Hotchkiss doesn't do enough for the town. For instance, one of the motivating features of going to the Board of Trustees and asking them to come up with a challenge gift for the new firehouse was a motivating factor of trying to impress upon the people in the town that Hotchkiss does indeed play a very important role and has over the years done an awful lot. The other thing that has interested me is the role that the school has played in the lake, conservation of Lakeville Lake, and the payment of the expenses for the weed harvesting machine and the lake study that has been carried on by the Hotchkiss Limnology Department over the years. So it's really, there's an awful lot going on, a lot of it sort of below the radar, and if you start adding all of these things up, it comes to a fairly substantial amount of benefit which the town of Lakeville Salisbury receives as a result of our presence here.
And what does Hotchkiss receive from the town?
Well, I think clearly they receive the very fine education which is provided by Salisbury Central School for faculty kids, and they receive terrific fire protection from the Lakeville Hose Company, and a volunteer ambulance squad is on duty to take care of any emergencies that come up on campus. For instance, a youngster being hurt at a football game can be transported by ambulance very quickly to Sharon Hospital for observation. Those are the things that come immediately to mind, but I'm sure there are many, many more.
What are some of the civic activities that you personally have been involved with?
Well, I think, first of all, I played, this is sort of a silly thing, but back in the 60s, I played on the Lakeville Firemen baseball team, which was a lot of fun. My wife didn't appreciate it particularly because it took us away most every Sunday, which was one of the few days off. Otherwise, I was working, but I enjoyed that enormously. And I got to know a lot of wonderful old people in the town and as a result of that involvement. But I think the first real involvement that I had came when I was asked by Bill Olsen to join the Sharon Hospital Board. And that was 1987. And several years later, I was involved in, the year after I was headmaster, I spent a year as the vice chairman of the Sharon Hospital Board, and the following year I wound up being chairman. And it was a particularly contentious time because at that point the hospital was running into significant financial difficulties. And as the board look ahead, they saw a fairly bleak future for the hospital. And so after a couple of years, we eventually decided that we would sell the hospital before we ran out of cash, and to a for-profit company, although we looked at nonprofits as well, who frankly were not interested in Sharon Hospital for the most part. Or if they were interested, they would have turned it into a Band-Aid station. And our only recourse, it wound up being that we would sell to Essent, Essential Healthcare, out of Nashville, Tennessee. That was about four or five years of intensive involvement, trips to Hartford, countless meetings at the hospital, and also coping with the negative reaction from a group called CASH, which was the group of people that were opposed very much to turning Sharon into a for-profit hospital. The problem is they couldn't come up with a viable way of preserving it as a nonprofit, and so so we did that. Following that, I think I took a year or two breather, because that stopped in about 2003. 2004, as we wound up the details of that, and then I got involved in the Salisbury Fire Commission, which was formed by the selectmen to study the possibility of relocating the hose company to a different spot, and I wound up chairing that group, which was a wonderful group of people who put countless hours into studying all sorts of aspects of this move, and finally came forth with a report to the selectmen and then to the town, which resulted in relocating the firehouse to its current placement on halfway between Lakeville and Salisbury. Well, then of course we had to wind up paying for it, and so I started a fundraising group called, I can't remember what the name of it was now, but I guess it was called the Salisbury, doesn't really matter, but it was a chance to help defray the cost of the new firehouse by going to people in the town and asking for their participation. And to get that started, I lobbied the Hotchkiss Board of Trustees to come up with a grant, which they did, of $400,000 on the condition that the town come up with $600,000. And we were able to get that amount fairly easily, and we wound up eventually raising just about $2 million of the cost of the new firehouse. Then I joined the board of the Salisbury Visiting Nurse Association about 4 years ago, and we have been going through a series of changes there in terms of leadership and coping with all of the mandates that come down from the state in terms of how you operate a situation like that. And that's been very, very interesting because it's sort of tied into the work of the hospital years earlier. You're dealing with people in this community who, for the most part, are elderly people who need the services of the Salisbury Visiting Nurse Association, but not in all cases. But anyway, it's a valuable nonprofit serving the residents of not only Salisbury, but also many of the towns here in the northwest corner. We serve, I think, 9 towns, as I recall. And then also I've been involved in the last 3 years in the Salisbury Association, serving as a trustee of that organization, which has been very, very interesting and has given me, once again, contacts with people in town that I otherwise would not have.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So that about sums it up.
Good job. Do you have anything that you'd like to add to this interview that I haven't covered?
Not that I can think of.
not sure what people are most interested in, but it would seem to me that the biggest change that I have seen in my 40 some odd years here, 40 years, I came here in 1964, so it's been more than 40 years, it's been almost 50 years, and what I've noticed, I guess, is that the area has become much more dependent upon weekend individuals that have bought homes here. And I find my concern with the area is, are we going to be able to maintain our volunteer services? Because those depend upon people who live in the area and are interested in giving their time to either the ambulance or the fire department. And I find that a lot of the people that escape to Salisbury in the for the weekends from New York and other places are really up here to sort of relax. And they're less interested in becoming involved in town politics or town services and so on and so forth. And it's not until they retire that they're up here full time that all of a sudden they find that, gee whiz, maybe I better
get involved.
Maybe I better participate in the town. And I wish there was some way that we could have convinced those people who are part-time residents of Salisbury to take a more active and involved interest in the community.
Hope springs eternal.
Hope springs eternal.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Chandler.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for your time.